said that she said he said that you said he said she said that she said you said she said that you said he said she said. All I'm asking for is fried bread. Settle down out on the edge of town, far from the neon lights, under the stars so bright. Fire glows and flickers between the cactus breakers out on the edge of town. He wants to settle down. All I'm asking for is fried bread. He likes his cornbread banning, tortillas, hot fanatic, cookie bread, pop ovens, pumpernickel, oven bread, rye bread with a pickle. Croissants and pastry, taste tasty, he doesn't seem to mind. 8-mile-long fried bread line, cause we're all the same inside. We need fried bread all the time. All I'm asking for, fried bread. Some sopapillas, bagels would be nice. Crazy for that pita bread, jalapeno pepper bread, fried bread.
Clouds are rising from the sea. Lonely land with a sandy shore. Eagles rising in their flight. The streaks of spirit in the dawn. Water jumbling from the clouds. Wash down the thunder pipe. Rivers glistening in the sun, beneath the water and the wave. The spirit lives within its world, and the barren fish beneath the sun. Thus the cycle has begun. The artist and his wooden cup. Dreamer and his visions dream through canvases and color schemes. Legends of the days gone by, sought the mysteries of the sea. And naked on the noonday shore, with powered flag and a brush unfurled, widening legends of his world, of beaver, badger, hawk and bear. Wistful dreams a dreamer dreams, boldly drawn the colored skin. But from the shapes upon the board, Earth's for knowledge yet withdrawn, as we mounted upon the desert sand, drinking from the drinking gourd, the sacred bear in search of fish. The fish beneath the water's wave, the river's tumbling to the sea. The cycle of a mystery.
We are the tribe that they cannot see. We live on an industrial reservation. We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them. We are the Halusa Nation. Our DNA is of earth and sky. Our DNA is of past and future. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the evolution, the continuation. The Halusa Nation. The Halusa Nation. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the Halusa Nation. Called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them. We are the Halusa Nation. Our DNA is of earth and sky. Our DNA is of past and future. We are the Halusa Nation. We are the evolution, the continuation. The Halusa Nation.
CITR 101.9 FM at
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Fun Drive 2024 is right around the corner, and this February is the perfect time to say yes to CITR and all it has to offer. Visit donatetocitr.ca right now, make a donation, and then claim your prizes. For a $30 donation, you'll receive a CITR earplug case. $60 gets you a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo. A donation of $101.90 scores you specialized marble dice and a song dedication on Valentine's Day.
The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross.
A $200 donation will get you an engagement ring 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle. $500 and you'll be sporting a nifty Just Married sweatsuit. And for a grand donation of $1,000, you'll get to host your own show on CITR 101.9 FM.
Testing, testing. Is this thing on?
And remember, all prize tiers include their specific prizes, plus all the prizes from lesser tiers. That means for an $1,000 donation to CITR, you will receive an earplug case, a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo, marble dice, a Valentine's Day song dedication.
The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross.
A 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle, a fashionable Just Married sweatsuit, and of course, your own show on the station.
All right, here we go.
So what are you waiting for? Say yes and visit donatetocitr.ca today and help us reach our goal of $20,000.
Hello, welcome to Unceded Airwaves. I'm Danny. Usually there's a few more people here, but today it is just moi, and Mila, our member, might be joining me a little later. Today's episode is on fry bread and food sovereignty, and we're calling it Fry Bread Sovereignty. So to get started, we did an interview with Bangin Bannock, who very kindly gifted me a fry bread mix to try, and I did, and my brother and I made stew and fry bread, and it was absolutely amazing. You should go buy some. Here's our interview. Welcome to the start of our interview. So first, I want to ask, what are your guys' names, and what's a bit of your story?
Yeah, so my name's Kelsey, Kelsey Coots. I am Nikasli on my father's side and Irish Scottish on my mom's side. Nikasli is just outside of Fort St. James, so that's a little northern here in BC. I was raised on Vancouver Island, and I'm currently living in South Vancouver. And I am one half founder of Bangin Bannock with Destiny, who's here with us today as well.
On Baywatch Day, good day. My name is Destiny Huchte. I am of Assiniboine Nakoda descent from my mom's side. So that's White Bear First Nations, just South Saskatchewan. And on my father's side, I'm Norwegian and German. Yeah, I was raised, spent like the majority of my life out on the Coast Salish territories. And I recently, just the end of last year, moved back home to my traditional territories. So it's nice to be, I'm not on reserve, but I'm fairly close now, so it's nice to be back. Yeah, closer to family, and I'm looking forward to hitting that powwow trail this summer, and yeah, just being community. And I did the powwow trail last summer, and yeah, after I did that, I was like, you know what, I want to go home. Like, it was just like amazing experience to be in community, and the powwows are nonstop in the summer, and it was just beautiful. So yeah, I'm back home. And yeah, I'm one of the co-founders of Bangin Bannock. We started up in 2021, so approaching our third year and like still learning, lots of learning is happening. And I had no background in business. It was just like this Indigenous youth entrepreneur program I hopped into and like just kind of started from there. But that's me. I'm a mama of three too. I got three beautiful children.
I love that so much. That is, like, amazing. I'm Otapemso Nehio, and Swedish, French, and German, and from Treaty 6 area, but I grew up in Sioux Territory in the Okanagan Valley in the interior, and I absolutely love that you're going to go on the power trail this summer. My goal for this summer, I don't want to go to super many, but I want to go to Onion Lake. I need to go to the Onion Lake powwow at least once.
Ooh, is that a big one?
It's like
I was just about to ask the same thing. Yeah,
I'm surprised you guys haven't heard of it. I mean, like Cree Nation, it's like one of the biggest powwows.
Ooh, I'm gonna put on the agenda.
Yeah, we should bend there. Okay, next question is: I would love to hear the story of Bangin' Bannock and just how it came to be, what it is now.
Yeah, Destiny, do you want to tell our story a little bit? Just because you started a bit there.
No, I'll hand it over to you, Kelsey. Go ahead.
So yeah, the beginning of Bangin' Bannock is kind of a funny one. We both took a young entrepreneur's business course in 2021. It was just like a little program during pandemic. My other job at the time was being a stagehand, which is setting up different events all over the city, and that really came to an absolute halt for myself over the pandemic. So I joined this little course, and the idea of it was that you have 45 days to conceptualize a business idea and then bring it to fruition. They give you a little micro loan of $1,000. I think we use $900 of that. And if you can pay that back in your first month from sales, then essentially you pass the little micro course, and it was something fun to do. And they paired you up with complete strangers. So Destiny and I had never met before starting this business together. We were just kind of thrown into it and learning right from the get-go. And our first 45 days were an absolute success, enough so that people kept on asking to order. After the 45 days were up, we paid back our microloan, no problem. And then that kind of just shifted into being a little bit more serious and learning a lot more about business. And the last few years have just been like, it's been learning. We've been blessed with amazing community, really, really incredible mentors over the last couple of years who've really helped us figure out what business is. Because I know for myself, I knew nothing about business when we got into starting this. It's kind of an organic thing that really just happened on its own. But because it was Bannock and it's something that we both absolutely adore and have really good feelings around and all of that, it was really easy to keep going forward and enjoy sharing that with people and having our conversations. So we've done some really neat things over the last few years. We've done some workshops with different organizations where we get to talk about Bannock and traditional food versus cultural food and the history of all that, while also cooking and sharing. Yeah, Destiny, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, one of like my favorite parts about this journey, it's just like bringing that Indigenous representation into what we do. And of course, we're like those social entrepreneurs where we like to use our platform and, you know, bring light to topics. And one of the things that we always talk about is like the revitalization of our Indigenous languages. And so one of the projects, Kelsey was like, hey, we should throw our language on our packaging, because we are regulated to have French on our packaging. But Kelsey just kind of like threw that idea out there, and I was like, yeah, why don't we put our languages on our packaging? And of course, we don't speak our languages. You know, there's a long history behind that of, you know, residential school and all of the colonial systems. But yeah, we reached out and started making those connections, and we made some connections with, so far we've connected with two Cree translators, and on our original packaging, we now have our Cree language on there. And then the second language we've put on our newly launched gluten-free mix is we worked with a Nakota translator. There was a lot more resources to connect with the Cree translator, but it did take some time to find a Nakota translator. But it's beautiful to connect, right? And your culture is, it's so wrapped around the language. So it was just like a lot of beautiful learning and connecting with our language translators. And I feel like there's a big opportunity there, right? And just like these little initiatives and you know, bringing these projects to our knowledge keepers. It was, yeah, that's like one of my favorite parts that we've been working on, and we're going to continue to do as we develop more products and different ways we can bring the language in. And and we currently don't have French on our packaging. We have, you know, it's become a little bit of an issue when we try and partner with some of the bigger grocery stores, or there was even one distributor. It was a hard no. They wouldn't work with us because we didn't meet the regulations that they were regulated under. And it's, you know, we always welcome the conversation of, you know, why aren't our languages the official languages of these lands as the original languages? So it's always bringing that conversation to the forefront, especially with these bigger, you know, companies and, you know, their CEOs and stuff like that, right? Just like kind of bringing that to the forefront of like, let's have this conversation. You know, you always hear that word reconciliation being thrown around. It's like, well, this is something that I would like to see, you know? But yeah, we love having those conversations, and we really like kind of pushing back a little bit. And yeah, one day I really hope we have our languages recognized, you know, official languages of these lands. They're the original languages, and there's so much more we can do, right? There's so much more we can do. But yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. My brother and I, well, we're Cree, and our grandpa went to residential school, so we lost the language there, but he did still retain a little bit of Cree. And when we saw the Nehiwilin on the package, when we turned it over and looked at, like, the ingredients and the thing on the back, we both got so excited, and we were like, oh my god, look! And we're trying to learn bit by bit, so you saying that, like, it had that effect on my family fully.
That's amazing. That is exactly what we're aiming for, is not only just bringing those feelings to the family, you know, like how special that is to actually see representation of your culture in a product that's like a little bit more mainstream or whatever. But it's also an opportunity for people who've never even seen that language to like run their eyes over it and, you know, let those symbols go through their brain. And, yeah, that's exactly the effect. I love that. I love hearing that. Mm-hmm.
My next question, which ties into so much about what we were already talking about agency for ourselves, but what does food sovereignty mean to you?
We have so many beautiful discussions about food sovereignty, because it's definitely something that, aside from Bang and Bannock, which is, you know, it's fry bread, so it's definitely not a traditional food in any way whatsoever. It's a cultural food, but it is a ticket to have more of these conversations about food sovereignty and traditional food systems, and we're both very passionate about that separately as well. Yeah, Destiny, do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, when I think about food sovereignty, it's like, for me, the first step is like connecting with our elders and our knowledge keepers, and like, you know, just understanding what our traditional food systems were and where we are today, and how do we, you know, try and revitalize those traditional food systems, and even the way that we feasted, right? Like caring for through food, and, you know, what does food symbolize? And, you know, growing up, I kind of had a different relationship with food, right? Growing up in poverty and, you know, not always having food and not always having extended family and community to kind of like support us when, you know, when we're in that kind of situation. So like food sovereignty is like, yeah, just connecting with our elders and our knowledge keepers, and, you know, learning what our traditional systems are, and how do we get back to that. And, you know, a lot of it's being on the land too, right? And connecting and understanding plants, and, you know, caring for what cares for us, right? You know, you have to care for the land, you have to care for the animals, and in return they're gonna care for you. And I think we're far from that now, and it's it hurts yeah. But you know, I still have hope. We talk about a food sovereignty project and partnering with a nation, and hoping to partner with my nation and, you know, start to revitalize those pieces, whether it's a little community garden or, you know, raising bison and just being on the land more, connecting.
Yeah,
absolutely. So much of it does come back to like our relationship with where food comes from, whether that's like growing the food or hunting the food. There's been a really big splice in our relationship with those things. And when we start to reconnect with those things, which is caring for the land and also having a relationship with all of the plants and animals on it, it will really shift the perspective of food in general, I think, as well. And so much of that does come from our knowledge keepers, exactly like Destiny said. So much of that knowledge is still there, and we have a chance to grab it right now.
Mm-hmm. When I was thinking of asking you guys about food sovereignty, I was thinking so much about agency, and specifically about, you know, like stew and fry bread. And like my brother and I were going to make elk meat stew, but we didn't have a good cut of it for the stew left. We had everything but good cuts for stew. And we made it, and I was thinking about how fry bread comes as a survival food and from like the oppression of our people. But now when we make our stew and fry bread, it's like comes from a point of pride and with our own agency to like enjoy it and to have pride in it and not just as a survival. I don't know. I really enjoyed that part of it.
That's really beautifully said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It does have that history, right? And it's like how we've been through so much, yet we can kind of celebrate and make something so beautiful and so delicious out of that time in our like ancestors and even our grandparents and our moms, like of their lives, right? And and it's celebrated now, but mm-hmm. it has that, and I think it does share a beautiful story around Bannock and the survival food, right? You know, even the ration changing, like that was a whole period that changed our food systems, our traditional food systems. It was disrupted, but you know, we carry it forward and you know, we celebrate it. If you don't have Bannock at a celebration, a ceremony, you know, you're gonna have some disappointed people there.
My dad, he grew up in BC. He was born in Saskatchewan but grew up in BC, and a lot of like Indigenous people in BC, including my family, relied on the Ulekin, and it was seen as like an embarrassing thing, a shameful thing, to be relying on Ulekin to get you through the season. And Bannock and Ulekin, it was such a shameful like poverty food to my dad growing up, but now my siblings and I like take pride in that, and I feel like that generational flip is all about like our regaining of food sovereignty bit by bit in our own unique ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge piece of it, right? Is having that pride and like, you know, and you know, it carries that story behind it.
I want to ask, what's in the future for Bang and Bannock? Because it seems such a like firecrack from the beginning. It's like getting orders and orders and orders. And what do you want to see in the future?
We have so many dreams. Definitely product expansion. We would love to see not only more products from ourselves, but maybe supporting other Indigenous businesses in a way to try and support food sovereignty, exactly like what we're talking about, like have maybe on our website a bunch of different products that are available and for people to try and get connected with different food sources that are local and have history and culture behind them and learn a little bit. And then also with product expansion in our own products, that gives us an opportunity as well to share more languages, support more translators, have more of that on the shelf as representation. Love to see more of that. And one day maybe we'd even like to see a brick and mortar where we can serve Bannock and serve beautiful cafe things and support community through offering jobs in a really safe and supportive environment that is focused on quite a bit more or really a different realm than the capitalistic realm altogether. We want to have a different support system there for our employees. And yeah, be able to share maybe some things in the front of the store, like different gallery stuff, maybe have community garden, like Destiny was talking about, be able to take something to our nation that can really connect people back to the land as well. Yeah, Destiny, what other dreams do we have?
Yeah, when I think of like economic sustainability and sovereignty for communities, I like immediately go to entrepreneurship. You know, if we're gonna really talk about that, it's we need our entrepreneurs, right? Like we need to be sustaining our own economies. And so with that, I have a huge passion of wanting to support and uplift other entrepreneurs. Recently, we saved up some of our donations. We donate 10% of profits. And we were able to save up enough, and we had $2,000 grants to Indigenous startup businesses. And yeah, we just put out the post and we got overwhelmed with applications. So it's just, you know, you want to support them all, and there's a lot of them out there. And but it was an honor to give two businesses that startup grant. And like, I'd love to do more of that, because it's really changed my life quite a bit to be an entrepreneur and to think big, right? To think big. I don't want to work a 9-to-5. And you know, our one mentor, Cynthia, she says, do you want to be known as that good employee? And I'm like, no, I don't want to be known as that good employee. I want to do something bigger and bigger with my life, and you know, really leave that legacy and uplift the community and support each other. And you know, economic sovereignty for our nations is a huge one, and that's really what I want to work towards. Yeah, and then I just like see my little brother, you know, he sees my products in stores and at Indigenous events and stuff, and he'll snap a picture and be like, hey, look what I saw. And so I know it's really sparking that in him too, right? Is like, you know, we come from the same place and we came from struggle, and for him to kind of see somebody, you know, in his family taking that step and doing something a lot bigger than what we were shown and taught.
Yeah, we're becoming the role models we never had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it sparks it in them, right? There's that spark, and it just lets them dream bigger, right? And that's what I love seeing, is, you know, just uplifting our community and, you know, bringing who we are, you know, having that Indigenous representation and what we are doing too is just a big bonus. But yeah, that's one of them. I mean, we could talk about that topic for quite a while, but that's definitely one of them.
Well, you can definitely always find us online at www.bankingandbannock.ca. We have an online store where you can order our bannock, and we'll ship anywhere across Turtle Island. And then we are in a number of stores across Canada as well. We do have a small list of that on our website, or you can send us an Instagram message at any time and we'll touch base with you and see your closest location. And I mean, just reach out to us at any time anyways. We love to connect.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me today. And the stories you guys told make me so happy. And like, I cannot stress enough, like, the economic sovereignty and creating, being the role models. Like, I feel the same way about my little brother. He's 15, and, like, he's so excited that I do radio and all this stuff that I never thought was possible. And you guys are such a big part of that, like, just your brand, and even just the fry bread itself, like, it really brought us together, and the experience of making it and flipping it over and seeing the Cree and getting all excited, and it was just such a nice experience, and I hope everyone goes out and buys some.
Oh, thank you so much for having us, Danny. It was really, really lovely to connect.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you at Onion Lake this summer.
Yeah.
MRG Live is happy to present Anomaly with his live band at the Wise Hall on Saturday, February 24th, with support from Blue Wednesday. Anomaly has toured his electro jazz project all over the world, But this February, the Montreal-based artist embarks on a full Canadian tour for the very first time. Come out to experience the innovative fusion of electronic beats, jazz harmonies, and funky grooves from the one and only Anomaly, live in concert with his band. Don't miss Anomaly at the Wise Hall in Vancouver on February 24th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
Is your mom obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So is Alice.
Are you too obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So are we.
Tune in to Viva Porú, el ungüento para el alma, every other Thursday at 4 p.m. here at CITR 101.9 FM.
A radio show dedicated to Latin awesomeness and culture. Hosted by yours truly, the one and only
DJ Bruja. And the other one and only
DJ D-Rod.
Featuring music genres like
salsa, sabrosura vintage, bolero, bossa, Latin indie, plus so much more.
Viva Peru, el invento para el alma, contains a high amount of llama content. DJ D-Rod and DJ Bruja are not responsible for a newly found llama obsession.
And you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. Doo-doo-loo-doo, doo-doo.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Unseated Airwaves. I'm Danny.
And I'm Mila.
And we are here today on the current unsurrendered, unceded territory of the Hunkamunum-speaking Musqueam First Nation. This is also the historical shared territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people. Firstly, there is no way we can continue on with an episode on our this show, Unseated Airwaves, that it's in the very name, without mentioning that Gaza needs to be freed from the ongoing genocide at the hands of the Israel Defense Forces, or rather, the Israel Occupation Forces. We stand in Indigenous solidarity with the people of Palestine. So, I'm Orepemsu Nehio, and Mila is... We both use she, her, and today's episode is kind of a casual discussion plus the interview you just heard with Bangin Bannock. This is on fry bread, food sovereignty. Food sovereignty was supposed to be all the episode was about, but that's a really big topic, so we just decided to focus in on culture from poverty and gaining agency over our own oppression. And fry bread as a food is a very big kind of symbol of that. So let's just start with our experiences with bannock, fry bread, whatever you want to call it, growing up.
Growing up, my mom, whenever she'd make bannock usually. Sometimes fry bread, same recipe, just cooked differently. She never used a written down recipe. She just had it, like, in her mind, mm-hmm. and made it perfectly every single time.
Yeah, and who is it passed down to her by?
I believe my great-grandma.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's passed down generationally. My family... I haven't even asked my dad ever for the recipe, but bannock is always what we made and what we called it. And I know that's pretty common among Métis families like mine. And we'd make bannock every time we went camping, you know, wrapping it around the stick and the fire. And I know that happened at a lot of just general events and field trips growing up. I feel like every Native kid in so-called Canada can relate to that.
Well, sometimes people add a little spin and wrap it around a hot dog, cook it over the fire.
Oh, yeah, I've had that one.
That's a classic.
That is a classic. A life source.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so I guess I couldn't really find anything, like, definitive for fry bread versus bannock, but growing up, like, my conception of it is just, like, bannock is baked and is more like a scone, and then fry bread is fried and is more, like, crispy and oily.
Yeah, I'd say that's the same for me, too. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard a lot more people in so-called America, like, in the U.S., who are Indigenous, use fry bread, and then in Canada, I think a lot of us, I don't know, we're both of, like, Eastern more descent, and our families use call it bannock.
Yeah, my mom tends to use it interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's kind of what I grew up with.
Yeah, it varies so much. I looked it up, and this is a quote that I found from Wikipedia. Bannock is generally prepared with white or whole wheat flour. I've never had bannock with whole wheat flour. Baking powder, sugar, lard, and water or milk, which are combined and kneaded, possibly with spices, dried fruits, or other flavoring agents added, then fried and rendered fat, vegetable oil, or shortening, baked in an oven, or cooked on a stick.
Yep.
Yeah. So the mix we talked about earlier, my brother and I made, but Mila was there and got to try it.
I was there, and I did get to try it, and it was really good.
It was really good.
It had been a while since I had some good fry bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely experts, and I highly recommend it. The packages, I believe, make, like, what, 4 to 6 pieces, depending on how big you want to make them.
Yeah.
And all you need to add to the mix is water, I'm pretty sure.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, if I remember correctly. It was really, really fun to make, and we still haven't made Mila's great grandma's recipe.
Well, but actually, we haven't completed. I tried once, and let's say I am not meant to be the one to make it.
Yeah, we didn't have the right ingredients. It didn't.
I think it might have been a me problem. We'll try again.
Not all of us are fry bread masters. I think one of my favorite, like, pop culture references to fry bread. Actually, let's see if we can. What is that?
Is it about the 50 pieces of fry bread?
Yes, from Smoke Signals. Oh, Arlene's Magical Fry Bread. I'll play it for you because it's a 2-minute clip. Kale, you're about to hear Arlene's Magical Fry Bread from our beloved movie Smoke Signals. Not our, but as in our, like, as a nation, as Indigenous people. This is our movie. Hold on. It's trying to play some ads for you before you get Arlene's Magical Fry Bread, so let me just skip this. Hold on. YouTube is not playing.
Technical
difficulties are happening. Very much so. We'll try and figure it out, but basically in Smoke Signals, there's a scene where there's a lot of people, too many people.
100 people, to be exact.
100 people, and only 50 pieces of fry bread. Only 50. Okay, let's see. I think I got it.
Victor's mom makes the best fry bread in the whole world.
Really?
It's so good they use it for communion back home. Arlene Joseph makes some Jesus fry bread. Fry bread that can walk across water. Fry bread rising from the dead.
Is that true? Huh? Come on, is that true?
Way back when, we were having a feast on our reservation. A good old feast. We didn't have a whole lot of food. Just a little bit of deer meat, a huge vat of mashed potatoes, some Coke, and fry bread. But the fry bread made all the difference in the world. You see, a good piece of fry bread turned any meal into a feast. Everybody sat at the tables waiting for the cooks to come with the fry bread. They waited and waited. But you see, there was 100 Indians at that feast and only 50 pieces of fry bread. Arlene kept trying to figure out what to do. I mean, it was her magical fry bread that everybody wanted, but Arlene knew what to do. You see, Arlene's fry bread was magic. Arlene was magic. She knew how to feed 100 Indians with only 50 pieces of fry bread. She went out to talk to the people. "Listen," she said, "there are 100 Indians here and only 50 pieces of fry bread." Everybody was mad. There was going to be a fry bread riot for sure. But then Arlene said, "But I have a way to feed you all." She took a piece of fry bread, she held it over her head, and she ripped it in half.
Oh, that's a good story. Is that true? Is that true?
No, it's not. And we'll leave you with that.
That's the story.
That's the story. I feel like that always just plays in my head. I feel like if you say 50 Indians and 100, or no.
No, other way around.
100 Indians and 50 pieces of fry bread, I feel like any Native person knows what you're referencing. Speaking of smoke signals, maybe, possibly, maybe, don't hold me to this, but there may be a screening of smoke signals as an event for the Indigenous Collective this semester, possibly around March, with fry bread.
Keep a lookout for it.
We post about stuff like that on our Instagram, Unseated Airwaves, so that's where you would see that when that happens. And I do know one of our volunteers has the capability, like Arlene, to make ton of fry bread to turn it into a feast.
That's
so
true.
I'm very glad that all of you tuning into the CITR airwaves got to hear that. And I think our general thesis with this episode is fry bread bannock is a food that came out of poverty and starvation and is not a traditional food to our people. It's I don't even know what would you call it. I guess a cultural food. Yeah.
It definitely has gained a lot of meaning for us.
Mm-hmm.
Though this is not something traditionally that's been a part of our culture for a long time.
Yeah.
It was created when the Europeans came over, from what I've been told.
Yeah.
Using European ingredients.
Yeah, using what was cheapest and what you had likely at any given time in the home and in bigger bags.
Yeah.
Yeah, like baking powder, flour, water, sometimes sugar, lard, or grease, or any kind like that. Yeah, I think that movie really shows, like, the stories and how fry bread has just become an assumed part of every event, every lunch you go to. I guess there's been discourse about the term Indian taco, because, you know, we're not Indians, we're Indigenous and we have our nations, but I think someone put it really well once, I think you know what I'm going to say, is like a lot of with our older people, like my dad, your mom, like grandparents, they don't really mind those terms because they were called a lot worse. They could have been called a lot worse.
And that was something that was said to me that I've thought about a lot, because it is true. They can be called a lot worse, and that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like counterproductive to try and police that language in community, especially. Like, I heard this story of deep in a Métis community out in the prairies, they would have events, and it's all mostly elders, and it'd be called the half-breed balls. And, like, people from, you know, BC, like, a half-breed ball, what is that? That is so offensive. But that's just, like, how you identify. And, like, when I was a kid, Aboriginal was a really common term. And I'd be a little weirded out if someone, like, referred to me as Aboriginal. But if I'm talking about, like today, but if I'm talking about stuffed, then like that terminology is there. Same with, so Indian taco is basically all taco ingredients, beans especially. Navajo tacos are a distinct style, on a piece of fry bread instead of the shell. It's super, super
really
good.
Really good.
We have them all the time. You might see them referred to now as indigenous taco. I don't know what else. I've seen people call all
Bannock tacos.
Bannock tacos. I've seen people call all Indian tacos Navajo tacos, but that's not true. There's like a more distinct style with Navajo tacos.
Yeah, and obviously, not only Navajo people enjoy these tacos on Bannock.
Yeah, it's not just a Diné thing. Yeah, from north to south, east to west, we love our fry bread. And if you heard that song at the very beginning to start our episode, you might have been surprised because it's a little folky than what we usually play. But Keith Cicola, love him. That's the guy who sang Indian Cars. Riding in my Indian car. Yeah, he has a song called Fry Bread. And that was what I played at the very beginning. And then you heard Barren Fish by Willie Dunn. And then Grandmother's Wisdom by Northern Cree. And then We Are the Hallucination by The Hallucination. All right. And with that, I think we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
And you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. Doo-doo-loo-doo. Doo-doo.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
A person with HIV can now live a long, healthy life thanks to treatment. But the first step is to get tested. The sooner you know your HIV status, the better. You can now test yourself at home with just a prick of the finger and get results within a minute. Order a free HIV self-test kit online at selftest.catie.ca. That's selftest.catie.ca. Your health is at your fingertips. A message from CATIE, Canada's source for HIV and hepatitis C information.